uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Happy Monday. Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy. Democracy to our republic. To our constitutionally limited democratic republic. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Our chat room, our live chat room, accessible by going to tomhartman.com. As well as the message board, the blog where you can participate. Everyone is welcome. And just the only rules are basically the rules of civility, decency, that sort of thing. But you know, other than that, all opinions, in fact, are welcomed. Lots in the news. There is just so much in the news today. I'm not quite sure where to begin. There's sort of the bizarre news. The Sun, for example, the newspaper. The Sun in the UK that has been running these photos of Saddam undressed. Today's issue of the Sun, of course, the cover has a picture of Saddam Hussein in his briefs, and he's wearing briefs, not boxers. And so that's the tyrant in his pants is the headline. But then you flip the paper open, and inside. This and the Sun online. You can read it, thesun.co.uk. You flip the Sun open, and there's a headline that says, Bush probes Saddam's pants. And a quote from Bush's spokesman about George W. Bush Jr. He has been briefed. He wants to get to the bottom of it. So, it's a little strange, I suppose. But what's even stranger, frankly... And this is where, you know, you go from the theater of the absurd to the absurd. The United States military expressed anger. This is from the New York Post. And, this is from the New York Times. The United States military expressed anger and dismay today over the unauthorized release of photographs of a jailed Saddam Hussein in his underwear and performing menial activity. Quote, these photos were taken in clear violation of Department of Defense directives and possibly Geneva Convention guidelines for the humane treatment of detained individuals, end quote. The military statement issued in Iraq said. The pictures were published on the cover and inside pages of two tabloids controlled by the media magnate Rupert Murdoch. And here's where it gets really ironic. You've got, now we had over the weekend, and actually I think it was just today, I may be wrong, I don't have the news story right in front of me, but I believe six more Americans have died now in Iraq. Not to mention Alawi's, one of his chief assistants, plus another one of Iraq's major senior politicians, the Sunnis. Which is Saddam's tribe, Saddam's religion, Saddam's region, Saddam's bunch, Saddam's denomination, I guess you'd call it. You know, the Sunnis and the Shia are both members of Islam. They're both parts of Islam, just like the Methodist Church and the Catholic Church are both part of Christianity. Although there are, I would suggest, Methodists who think the Catholics aren't Christian, Catholics who think the Methodists aren't Christian. Similarly, there are Sunnis who think that Shia are not Muslim, and Shia who think that Sunnis are not Muslim, as you get into the fringes, you know, of these religions. Well, in any case, here you've got the broad consensus is that the Sunnis, who are out of power now, who controlled Iraq for years and years and years under Saddam, who are a minority in Iraq, the majority are the Shias, that the Sunni, that the force behind the insurgency, behind the terrorism within the country of Iraq, is Sunni generated. Keep in mind, Osama bin Laden is a Sunni Arab, a Sunni Muslim, rather. that the Wahhabists of Saudi Arabia, the particularly virulent and toxic right-wing strain of Islam, the Islamic equivalent of Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell, the Wahhabists, of which, you know, Osama bin Laden is sort of like the to the Muslim world what Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell are to the Christian world, that these guys are all Sunnis. And that there's only, I believe, three countries in the Middle East that are actually Sunni-controlled. Most of the Arab world is Shia. Although, just like the evangelical Protestants are out there really giving the Catholics a run for their money with worldwide evangelism, the Sunnis now, with Osama bin Laden as their poster child, are giving the Shia a run for their money as the evangelical Muslim movements across the, particularly in Asia and Africa, are now increasingly largely Sunni-driven. I mean, these are the subtleties that I think most Americans are completely unaware of. But anyhow, the point of all this is that the Sunnis are the ones who, by and large, have endorsed things like suicide bombing and terror attacks. And the Shias, by and large, have said, no, let's not go there. You don't see suicide bombings happening in Iran, for example, which is Shia, and virtually entirely Shia. All the Iranians are Shia. Whereas you do see it in the countries where you've got the Sunnis. And which is not to paint Sunnis with this with a particular brush entirely, but the point is that you really don't want to be, if you've got a country where you've got a bunch of angry Sunnis, like you do in Iraq, you really don't want to be stirring up the Sunnis. And so just as it's possible to argue, and it's a thin argument, and in fact, you know, generals in the United States Army have said it's not really a valid argument, but nonetheless, it's an argument that is made by the right wing, just as it's possible to argue that Newsweek's reporting that the Quran had been desecrated, reporting, by the way, that is corroborated by the Red Cross, that is corroborated by the testimony of many former detainees who have now been released, that is corroborated by translators who were members of the United States Army, that, you know, dozens of sources to back this thing up. Although Newsweek had only used one single source when they wrote the original piece, it still baffles me why Newsweek is still backpedaling on this thing. Why don't they come out and say, hey, you know, okay, we had one source. He may or may not have been wrong, but here's a bunch of other sources, guys. And I suspect that they probably will come around to that. Although, maybe not. Maybe it is that they are so cowed, they are so terrified of losing access to the White House, that Time will be able to interview Bush, Time will be able to interview Karl Rove, Time will be able to interview Bill Frist, Time will be able to interview senior Republicans, and Newsweek and U.S. News Report will be able to interview all the senior Republicans, and Newsweek will never again interview a Republican. They may be so afraid of that, that they're willing to start taking the heat for a failed administration policy. But here's the question. Here's the big issue. This is the thing that really gets me. You could argue, and certainly the Reich is doing this, you could argue that by Newsweek reporting that there had been desecration of the Quran, there were some people who got really stirred up, and that led to deaths. Couldn't you also argue that when you show pictures of Saddam Hussein, the head Sunni, you know, still revered by the Sunnis in Iraq, when you show pictures of Saddam Hussein in his underwear, that you are stirring up the Sunnis in Iraq, and that maybe the six dead Americans this weekend, and maybe the dead assistant to Alawi, and maybe the 50 or 60 or 70 other dead Iraqis from this last weekend, that some culpability for their deaths should rest at the feet of whoever published these photos. And here's where it gets interesting. You ask the question, well, okay, that case would actually probably be a heck of a lot easier to make than the case about Newsweek. Because Newsweek didn't publish pictures. Newsweek's piece was in their Periscope thing, which is just this little kind of gossip column. You know, Newsweek, you know, it's arguable. But here you've got photos, and it's clearly upset the Arab world. Why aren't the right-wing bloviators going on and on and on about how dare these people publish these photos? Could it have something to do with the fact that the guy who owns The Sun, which published the photos, also owns Fox News? Might that have something to do why there is no criticism of The Sun coming from the right-wing noise machine? I suspect I would be amazed to hear somebody in Rupert Murdoch's pocket, like Sean Insanity Hannity, coming out and saying, we need to hold accountable Rupert Murdoch. Rupert Murdoch is responsible for the death of Americans. I just don't think you're going to hear that. Now, I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. That if you're going to argue that Newsweek stirring up the Arab world is leading to deaths, and therefore they should be more responsible, what's wrong with arguing that Rupert Murdoch stirring up the Arab world is leading to deaths, and he should be more responsible? Frankly, the bottom line for me is that whatever the press does, the press does. And in this regard, as strange as this may sound, I'm inclined to agree more with George W. Bush, actually, when he said, I don't think a photo inspires murderers. He said, I think they're inspired by an ideology that is so barbaric and backwards that it's hard for many in the Western world to comprehend how they think. Now, the problem with that statement is that, first of all, he's saying a photo didn't inspire them, but we're willing to pick on Newsweek. A few words might have inspired them. Well, come on. You can't have it both ways, number one. And number two, when he says they're inspired by an ideology, many people in the Middle East are going to interpret that as a religious ideology. They're going to remember General Boynton saying, our God is bigger than their God, and all that kind of stuff. But nonetheless, I'm inclined to agree with at least the spirit that, in the most charitable interpretation that could be put on Bush's words, which is the press does what it does, and the terrorists do what they do, and the terrorists are not reacting to the press. Now, the problem for Bush is that once you accept that logic, then you have to ask the question, okay, if they're not responding to the press, if it's not a few photos that are making these guys kill people, and they weren't killing people before we were there in Iraq, what is it that's making them kill people? Could it have something to do with an illegal invasion? Could it have something to do with, killing 100,000 Iraqis? Could it have something to do with the fact that they don't have water and electricity now? Could it have something to do with the fact that we rewrote their constitution to turn it into a neoconservative paradise where multinational corporations can do anything they want and unions are banned? Could it have something to do with widespread unemployment? Could be. 20 minutes past the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
The fact is that they tell you lies, remain like oil becomes democracy.
Welcome back.
The fact is that they tell you lies, then get different names, like collateral damage. The fact is that the dead, they all had different plans. They all had names and faces, hopes and dreams. The fact is war solves nothing, makes a lot of people dead, and a few rich people happy.
Yeah.
Stop the war!
Stop the war! Stop the war!
Stop Welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Don in Woodland Hills, California. Hey, Don.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. What's up?
I'd like to address a couple of right-wing talk show hosts and right-wingers that have said, like on television, Pat Robertson, or I think it was Jerry Falwell, that said, kill him in the name of the Lord.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, or words to that effect, yeah.
Mike, well, that's exactly what he said, kill him in the name of the Lord. I remember that. I was on Fox News, had Rainbow Push Coalition guy. Who was it?
Jesse Jackson?
Jesse Jackson. He just sit there and shook his head. Just, you know,
yeah.
That's not what the same. You got Michael Savage on the radio. I heard him say before the Fallujah invasion, say, we should go into Fallujah and make a parking lot out of it.
Yeah.
I mean, and then you got Junior, the great George Junior, saying, bring it on, you know.
Yeah. It's a tragedy. What's your point, Don?
Well, when he says that, I mean, if he's trying to liberate the Iraqi people, why is he trying to bring the fight there? Because you remember all the right-wingers say, bring the fight overseas instead of on our mainland.
Well, the reality is that the reason why we're in Iraq was to get Republican control of the Senate in 2002 and to get George reelected in 2004. This was all a partisan election strategy based on the assumption that Americans will always vote for whoever's in charge if there's a war and Americans are afraid and they perceive there to be an external enemy.
And I agree with that.
These guys did. It was all about politics.
I talked to a couple of Republicans out here, and they said, I don't support what George W. Bush is doing, but he got us in it. He's going to have to get us out.
Yeah.
The kind of mindset of that, man. I was just like,
yeah.
All right. Good luck.
Yeah. What can you say? Okay. Well, Don, thanks for the call, and thanks for making the point. I appreciate it.
Thanks for your show. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And we will keep on keeping on here. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Scott in San Diego, California on the line. Hey, Scott, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good morning, Tom. We're having Portland weather down here in San Diego. It is gray and misty.
Oh, really? And it's warm and sunny here.
You're having San Diego weather.
Yeah, I know. It's incredible. It's going to be 73 today. It's beautiful.
My goodness gracious. Okay, you swap weather with us today.
I guess so. Yeah, today.
don't try it again.
Yeah, well, you know, you're down in California. So when I moved here to Oregon, I had to take an oath not to tell you this, but it was kind of an informal oath, so I guess I can kind of break it. Yes, it rains a lot here, but in between the rain, like every single day when it rains, the sun comes out. It's really cool. It'll rain for a half hour, and then the sun comes out for a half hour, and then it'll rain for a half hour, and then the sun comes out. So you don't get that sun deficient thing that I got when I, in other parts of the country where I've lived, where it just kind of, you know, gets gray for weeks at a time. Or in Germany, we lived in central Germany, and I remember back in the 80s, and I remember the local radio hosts were doing, in German, of course, doing a countdown of days, 111 days before the sun had not once come out. It's not like that here.
That explains a lot about the Germans.
Yeah, it does. Well, at least the central Germans. This was a part of Germany, actually, that had been a penal colony back in the 8th century. But in any case, what'd you call about?
Well, I got a question I think you can uniquely answer. First of all, I got to do a little background. My opinion is that Bill Clinton is the best Republican president we've had this century. He's an Eisenhower Republican.
Yeah, I would say I think Eisenhower was a better president, but I would say that he was probably the best. Yeah, I don't disagree with that. We got about 5 seconds, by the way.
Okay, I'll hurry fast. I think that H.W. is bonding with Bill because, and I understand Barbara introduced him as son, because, you know, Junior rejects his father, Bill needs a father figure, and H.W. desperately needs a successful son. And so they've adopted each other, and I think that might make sense. What do you think?
I think it makes perfect sense. You know, I had not considered it, but now, and as you lay it out, it makes absolutely perfect sense. Because Junior, Bush Junior, and Bush Senior really, you know, Bush Junior really hates his father.
And H.W. at his age desperately needs someone he can.
It's incredible.
Dead.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
W, you gotta help me. These mercury emission standards are gonna kill my bottom line. You'll take care of it? How much should I make this out for? Do say hello to your pappy.
Yes, it's the billionaires for Bush. Well, that was an interesting point that Scott made, the caller. In fact, I got so interested in it, I ran right up into the break and didn't realize it. That Bush Sr., you know, really wants to have a successful heir, a successful progeny, a son figure that he can relate to. And definitely doesn't relate much at all to George Bush Jr. You know, the families rarely get together. You know, Bush Jr. even slapped his father in the face. He tried to pick a fist fight with him once, but brags about it, you know. But the slap in the face was when he told Bob Woodward that he didn't consult his father about the Iraq War, that he has a higher father that he talks to. And he just, you know, you rarely see them. He apparently has some sort of relationship with his mother, but, you know, it's widely known that he dislikes his father. And part of that comes out of the fact that everything that his father did, Bush was the opposite. His father was the hero at Yale. He was a straight-A student. He was, extracurricular, intramural activities, very, very successful. Bush Jr., on the other hand, a failure at those things. He was a C student. He would have been thrown out of Yale had it not been for the intervention of his father and a lot of Bush money coming into play. And, you know, stories about even hiring people to write papers and things for him. Certainly for a history major, he does get some credibility to that. And then, you know, his father was a decorated bomber pilot. As I recall, he was a pilot during World War II, and he was shot down. And questions about that, but I'd say by and large, you know, he was heroic. He volunteered for this. You know, he there he was. And the son, instead, got out of the Vietnam War instead of going off to war. And then the father was, ran successful oil business in Texas, and the son tried to run an oil business in Texas, in fact, twice in a row, and both cases needed to be bailed out, once by Salman bin Laden, who Osama's younger brother, who then later died mysteriously in a Texas plane crash when the Democrats started investigating the connections between him and Bush Jr., and then later on by other friends of Bush's father. So, you know, it's one of those curious things. And then Bill Clinton, whose father died when he was young, or left, actually, I think his father just left, you know, and he never knew his father, who needs a father figure. You know, there's an old saying about psychoanalysis, you know, you psychoanalyze people that you don't know at your own risk. It's sort of like, you know, a variation on, you know, the guy who has himself as a lawyer has a fool for a lawyer. But nonetheless, fascinating. And I will stop the speculation at that point. Alan is on I-80 in Indiana, pulled off the side of the road. Hey, Alan, sorry to make you wait while I went into that rambling. I meant to pull you right up as soon as we came back from the break. There you are. Alan, thanks for calling.
Yes, I found out that Mr. George Galloway is a big union supporter over in Britain.
And oh, yeah.
Also, he says that he wants to make his unions worldwide, so I figured that's a reason why the Republicans are picking on him.
Well, you know, he supports a worldwide union movement, Galloway, certainly. Galloway was a member of Tony Blair's Labor Party for years and years and years, and the only reason that he left Labor, he was actually kicked out of the Labor Party 2 or 3 years ago, was his opposition to the Iraq War and his saying that Blair had become basically a toady. I mean, they call him Toady Blair instead of Tony Blair, toady to George W. Bush, Jr. And so I think that, and Galloway then got elected, even without the support of the party, running against a Labor Party member in the last elections, that just, you know, a couple of weeks ago. So, you know, Galloway has a lot of credibility in the UK, and they're paying a lot of attention to this. Meanwhile, here in the United States Senate, Norm Coleman has apparently had stricken from the congressional record Mr. Galloway's comments. You cannot find, if you look at the testimony from that day when Galloway took apart Norm Coleman, you cannot find that testimony in the congressional record.
Sounds so bizarre.
Yeah, it is bizarre, Alan. It's, I mean, the you'll find the most obscure things in the congressional record. People, you know, and you know, a resolution to have the snail, you know, the snail of the week or whatever. I mean, it's just, and here, this guy comes over from the UK to testify in a major hearing on a major issue, oil for food scandal, the whole thing, and he gives just riveting testimony that's reported all around the world, and out of all that testimony in that day, that testimony just happens to have vanished from the congressional record. I would say Norm Coleman's in big trouble, and the Republicans are in big trouble, and they can't deal with truth tellers. Alan, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I do appreciate it, and thanks for pulling over to the side of the road there. Mary in Michigan on the line. Hey, Mary, thanks for calling 1-866-889-8894.
Hi, good afternoon, Tom. Oh, I was so excited to talk to you to tell you about the protests on Saturday.
Yes, I was so looking forward to hearing from somebody in Grand Rapids who might have attended that. What happened?
Well,
this would be in
all,
Calvin College, by the way, for the rest of our listeners in the rest of the United States. Calvin College, a Christian college in Grand Rapids, George Bush invited himself, basically, asked if he could show up. And, you know, John Calvin, and in fact, well, I've got some statistics on it around here someplace. But anyhow, he had a rather checkered past, but, you know, Calvinism has survived. And, you know, to pick on my own religion, I was raised a Methodist, and John Wesley was a Methodist minister who came out of the UK rather than out of Germany, but or out of Switzerland. But, you know, John Wesley was all in favor of burning witches as well. So, you know, it's all of the denominations have come a long way. But nonetheless, the Calvinists are rather conservative, and so George thought that he would be right at home there. And apparently he wasn't.
We, surprise, surprise.
What happened?
It was just absolutely great. First of all, are you aware of this open letter?
Yes, it was in the newspaper.
Right. Did you get a chance to see that at all, or did they talk about it on the national, you know, throughout the national media?
Well, it was published on the internet. It was published, I believe, Common Dreams had it. One of the big websites, Common Dreams or Buzzflash, had a link to it or an article about it. So yes, I don't have it in front of me, and I don't have it word for word. But basically, the gist of it was. I think it was summarized by the buttons that so many people were wearing, which is God is neither Republican nor Democrat.
Yes. If I can just read you one of the most profound statements. Is the whole thing was absolutely wonderful. There was 823 alumni, students, and faculty, which really surprised me because Kent County, Western Michigan, is very, very conservative. And you're talking about Peter Secchia, who was Carol Rowe's good friend, who, by the way, was responsible for getting Georgie here.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a very, very conservative area. But a couple, just a very couple of statements here. This is so profound. And then, again, it says, Dear Mr. Bush, by their deeds ye shall know them, says the Bible. Your deeds, Mr. President, neglecting the needy to coddle the rich, desecrating the environment, and misleading the country into war do not exemplify the faith we live by.
Wow.
I was so proud, and there's more, but that's you know, the bottom line for me. But it just surprised me that these people had such courage to come out and take a stand against him because, again, this is such a conservative area. But as far as the process itself, West Michigan really pleasantly surprised me. There were people lined. I remember you saying you were kind of familiar with Grand Rapids.
Yeah, I was born there.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. And, so my brother lives near Grand Rapids, and I didn't grow up in Grand Rapids. I grew up in Lansing. But I certainly know the area.
Okay.
I have all kinds of relatives all through there, up into New Wago and Holland, and yeah, I know the area.
Okay, so then you're familiar with the East Belt Line and Burton, where the corner where Calvin sits. Well, Tom, I didn't get a chance to get out. I couldn't find a place to park, but I drove up and down. There were hundreds and hundreds of protesters lined all the way up and down the East Belt Line, all the way down to Burton and
Gretchen. No, we didn't see that on the national news.
Oh, I'm not surprised at all. I saw that on World News Tonight, and they didn't show that part of it. They only showed just snippets of it. But it was such a sight to see. There were, I mean, literally hundreds of people. In fact, there was a woman, a Calvin College grad. Her name was Linda Bradford. She graduated in 1969. She came all the way from New York to walk in the protest to let them know that we did not approve of this man. And then I tell you another thing too. He spoke for 14 minutes. Ha ha.
Right.
And it is costing the city, it says here, from $25,000 to $30,000 for police and fire overtime. While at the same time, our city manager, Kurt Kimball, announced that they're going to be closing pools. The kids are going to be getting out of school pretty soon. There'll be nothing for them to do. They love nothing more than to go to the pools and recreation. Nothing for them to do now but hang on the corners while we're paying $30,000 and people are robbing banks to feed their kids.
Yeah.
Over this man.
Welcome to Bush World.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. But I got to say, I was so proud of it. And the protests were very, very peaceful. So we basically drove up and down, you know, honking our horns, just so in solidarity. And some of the signs were so wonderful. They were so appropriate. For example, here's one here. No one died when Clinton lied. Under Bush, the rich get richer. And then I think my favorite one of all is that this is from God. I am not a Republican nor a Democrat. Or no, I'm sorry, I'm reading this wrong. I am not Republican, and neither is my only son, from God.
Well said. Mary, thanks a lot for the call and for sharing that with us.
Oh, you're so welcome.
I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Marvelous, marvelous story. Speaking of, we've got a couple of calls from that area. Grand Rapids, Glenn in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Glenn.
Hi, Tom. I attended that demonstration. I had a sore throat and whatever, but I still had to make it by all means. So
yes, it's a civic duty.
Yes, it was, and I went. And it was the local news did cover it, and the paper said there was hundreds on the local paper then. But what I wanted to talk to you about, my theory about Rumsfeld and Cheney, I think that they had 20 years. They were in office when Reagan was in office.
Right.
And I think they had a chance to study the situation.
Actually, they were in office when Jerry Ford was in office. Rumsfeld and Cheney were in the Ford administration before Reagan.
Yeah, well they had dealings with Saddam back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they hatched their plan, and I think their plan is Cheney's energy policy, which we will now never get to know about. And I think they've had 20 years to mastermind that, to establish a presence in the Middle East where the oil is. That's my theory.
Yeah, it may well be, Glenn, and I wouldn't discount that, and I don't disagree with you. One of the things that I find really fascinating about, and thank you for the call, Glenn, one of the things that I find really fascinating about all this is that back in the late 70s, Don Rumsfeld, when he was in the Ford administration, Don Rumsfeld was coming out and saying that the Soviet Union had secret weapons of mass destruction. That they had developed a submarine technology where their submarines were invisible to us, and they were untraceable. And that they had weapons of mass destruction on them. And he used that phrase, weapons of mass destruction. And the CIA came out and said, no, Donald Rumsfeld is wrong. The Soviet Union had secret weapons of mass destruction. That they had developed a submarine technology where their submarines were invisible to us, and they were untraceable. And that they had weapons of mass destruction on them. And he used that phrase, weapons of mass destruction. And the CIA came out and said, no, Donald Rumsfeld is wrong. Sorry, he's wrong. And nonetheless, mass destruction. And the CIA came out and said, no, Donald Rumsfeld is wrong. Sorry, he's wrong. And nonetheless, he promoted this, and they created this group called the Committee for the Present Danger, which still exists. You can find their website out there, the Committee for the Present Danger, to promote the idea that the Soviet Union had weapons of mass destruction. And the CIA came out and said, no, they're not there. There is no evidence of that. And Rumsfeld came out and said, see, that's proof that they're there. The fact that you can't find them proves they're there, and they're very well hidden. In fact, the whole point of them is that they're invisible. It's like, you know, people who believe in UFOs kind of thing. It's really quite remarkable. Jeremy in State College, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Jeremy, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I got two things for you. First of all, you were on your show on Friday. You were kind of fumbling around with some dates for the Communications Act. I just thought I'd give that to you.
It was 96, wasn't it?
No, the Federal Communications Act.
Oh, in the very beginning.
FCC, yeah.
Putting we the people at risk, even if it means that, you know, we get exploited, then that's just fine. And, you know, whereas the traditional liberal viewpoint, and using liberal as, you know, George Washington calling himself a liberal, Thomas Jefferson calling himself a liberal, the traditional liberal viewpoint is that, you know, there are a lot of things that private business does well and government should not stick its nose into. And there are a few things that have, those things that have to do with the commons, those things that have to do with our ability to survive, like knowing whether or not there's a tornado coming, that really we the people would like to maintain control of. Thank you very much. It should not be subordinate to profit. So,
right, and he claims that his bill is not going to affect emergency situations for the National Weather Service, just day-to-day forecasting.
Yeah, dream on.
If I want to go see it for free on the web and not deal with pop-up ads and go to the National Weather Service and my tax dollar pays for it, then I should be able to do it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, you must be a liberal there, Jeremy.
I guess.
Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you in Pennsylvania. The Santorum home state, as it were. We will be back after this with more of your calls, 866-889-8894, and lots more news. Interesting what's coming up with the, you know, stem cells. A little bit on that. Army torture, a time-delayed political death.
I guess I better let the...
bringing democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
They tell us the president the same way. They sell us our clothes and our cars.
Tell them Jackson Brown.
They sell us everything from youth to religion. Same time they sell us our war.
But I want to know.
I want to know who the men in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are. But they're never the ones to fight or to die. And there are lights in the balance.
And welcome back, my friends. 4.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tony in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Tony.
Hello, Tom.
What's up?
I was going to talk to you about Calvin College. You said that George Bush basically invited himself there.
Yeah, that was my understanding. That's at least how it was reported in the national media.
Well, what actually happened is Rich DeVos, so you're from Michigan, I'm sure you know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
A founder of Amway. Well,
right.
It was either his daughter or his granddaughter was graduating Saturday. And his wife is head of the Michigan Republicans. She's basically the one that got him to come in there.
Oh, interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. So how do you know that?
It was a thing that we were talking about it someday, and someone who actually works at Amway, higher up in Amway, told that to someone else I know, basically. But
yeah. Interesting. Interesting. So that's, well, you know, however he got there, and he was trying to turn it into a campaign stunt, and I think, frankly, it backfired. Tony, thanks for the call, though. I appreciate it. Rick in Michigan. Hey, it's Michigan Day. Hey, Rick.
How you doing, Tom?
Good. I guess, this is a big deal. I mean, this is a national story coming out of Grand Rapids.
Well, absolutely. I was not at the function, but the local NBC affiliate Channel 8, which I'm sure you're familiar with, telecasted it.
Yeah, it's WOD-TV, isn't it?
Well, yeah, they've actually, it's out now, WOD-TV, but that's okay.
Oh, okay. Right? It was Wood-TV when I was a kid. Yeah.
You're right. Okay. That speech, it was walking in us, it was sort of like the people were on cue to cheer him. When he first came in, his speech was unadulterated drivel.
Mm-hmm.
And he was only interrupted once by applause, and then he left. It was sort of like, he knew he had to be there, but he wasn't as enthusiastic as you might think. So, and people in this area kind of noticed it. And for your listeners around the country, this is about as conservative of areas, Orange County, California. So that gives them an idea. Thanks,
yeah.
Tom.
Thanks a lot, Rick. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's, and then he leaves with a saddle. I mean, they'd given him somebody had given him a saddle. Apparently, they didn't tell the person who put the saddle together, which was a very nice gift, that George Bush is afraid of horses and therefore doesn't ride. He rides his pickup truck. They call him a windshield rancher. But anyway, interesting times. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. A Guccione alert. Scott Forrester here, engineering the program with us, and just reminded me about Guccione. I told you that for the last couple of weeks, we've had this goose sitting on our back deck, or back dock, or whatever you call the thing, in the river here, and here in Portland. And this goose has, like, just decided, you know, this is his territory, and nobody's coming near. And any goose, you know, he'd let ducks and sparrows and things through, but any goose that got within, I'd say, 100 yards of our place, this goose just would go after, and chase him away. It's incredible. And so we named him Guccione because he was acting a little off the wall. And actually, Swami Vyanananda named him Guccellini. He came over to the house and met him and says, oh, that's Guccellini. Well, yesterday morning, a second goose showed up, a little bit smaller than Guccellini, but looking the same. I guess they're Canadian geese. And I can't tell how to tell a male from a female. Maybe if somebody knows, they can let me know, inform me, drop in the chat room or call us and let us know. But in any case, a second goose showed up along with a little baby gosling, little thing you could, about the size you could fit into a teacup, all yellow feathers, yellow down, really, just yellow fluff. And this gosling was so immature, I mean, I think he was just born, or hatched, that he would walk four or five steps and then he'd fall over. And then he'd have to sit there and catch his breath and, kind of catch up. And then he'd walk a couple of steps and fall over. And Guccellini not only let them be there, but welcomed them and was protecting them. And again, any other geese who came by. And so the conclusion that I've come to is that this is Guccellini's mate, and that she was probably on the shore for the last couple of weeks, sitting on the egg, and Guccellini was out here protecting her from, all foes and competitors, and because they've been they were there this morning too. Guccellini now has a mate and a child. So now it's we've got to figure out a name for the gosling. And for Guccellini's partner, I don't know who Mussolini's partner. And also, now I'm thinking quite differently about Guccellini. He wasn't some wacko goose. And I'm glad I didn't interfere with it, because I was thinking this goose is nuts. I ought to go out there with a broom and shoo him off. No, he wasn't nuts. He was doing the right thing. So anyhow, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to be on the program. Mike in Raleigh, North Carolina, on the line. Hey, Mike. Oh, let me push the on-off button here. There you go. Now we can hear you.
Hello?
Yeah, you're live and on the air, Mike.
Oh, hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Tom, I just wanted to mention something I saw on C-SPAN a week ago. I was watching Book TV,
mm-hmm.
and they had this professor on from Boston University. His name was Andrew Basevich.
Uh-huh.
And he's got a new book out called The New American Militarism.
Oh, interesting.
And he talked about he put some facts out. He gave a speech in front of the Council on Foreign Relations, and it was televised on C-SPAN. And he mentioned a couple of interesting facts. One I thought was fascinating is that the United States spends as much money on defense as the rest of the world put together.
Yeah, I had known that.
Have you heard that?
Yeah.
And also that we have military bases in 100 foreign countries.
Yep, I knew that too. It's you have to wonder, why? It's like,
that's why? Yeah, why?
If this gets back to Dick Gregory's old comment that I love to quote, where he said, "I don't know why we're running around the world shoving, our way of life down people's throats with the barrel of a gun." He said, "When you've got something good, you don't have to force it on people; they will steal it." And the reality is that we are creating something that looks very much like empire. And empires are usually maintained as empire because they're not a form of government that people would voluntarily or willingly adopt for themselves. And you have to ask yourself, why is it that we spend more on military than all the other countries in the world? And what kind of quality of life could we have? I mean, you look at other countries.
Absolutely.
Where they have, better, longer longevity, better educational systems, good healthcare systems, things like that. Western European nations, for example, where they spend a fraction. They spend a fifth, a tenth, a 20th, a 50th of what we spend on defense, and they take the rest of that money. And their taxes aren't all that different than ours. In some cases, they're a little higher. But they take the rest of that money and they say, okay, everybody has health care. Everybody has old age pensions. They have, nice homes for people when they get old. Hospices, good hospice care. And there's unemployment insurance. If you can't work, the government, on and on it goes, And
yeah.
These things somehow just don't get discussed here in the United States.
People don't understand out there. I don't think they realize that The Europeans are now moving ahead of us in standard of living.
Oh, it's not now. It's been going on for 20 years. This is the result of in 1980, in the early 1980s, Ronald Reagan declaring war on the middle class, on working people, and you know, on behalf of his rich benefactors. And by rich, I don't mean people making $200,000-$300,000 a year. I'm talking about the people making millions and billions, or who are worth millions and billions.
The top 1%.
Yeah, or 1 or 2%, however you want to define that. And absolutely, absolutely. The European dream is now, you know, ascendant. What people used to refer to as the American dream. I don't think anybody's talking about the American dream anymore. Even in the United States, we don't hear much talk about the American dream anymore because it's embarrassing. The conservatives don't talk about it anymore because people go, oh, yeah, the American dream. You mean working for Walmart when you're 55 or 60 years old, or 30 years old, even scarier, trying to raise a family working at Walmart.
Hey, Tom, can I mention one more thing about the military?
You certainly can, Mike.
The Department of Offense. Maybe we should call it the Department of Offense from now on. I heard on the news that some time ago, matter of fact, this would be a good question for Bernie when he comes on, is I heard that the Congress has given the Defense Department a pass on their annual audit.
Well,
because in the last several years, the Defense Department has not been able to give them an audit.
Right. There's a trillion dollars missing. There's a trillion dollars missing.
Trillions missing.
Over $1 trillion missing.
And they can't account for it.
That's right. And it ain't chump change. And, I mean, there's some $8 billion missing just in Iraq, just recently. I mean,
it's unbelievable.
It really and truly is. It really and truly is, Mike. It's a national scandal, but you won't hear the cons talking about it because, you know, there's this thing that Dwight Eisenhower talked about, the military-industrial complex. And it's real and it's there and it has tremendous power and it has the ability to get people elected or defeated in congressional and senatorial races. And so you don't hear much about it. Plus, they are big contributors to television. I wonder how many Americans wonder why defense contractors are running ads on CNN, you know, or on TV. Why would it be that on a news network you're seeing an ad for Lockheed Martin? Lockheed Martin is selling jets. Well, you know, traditionally when you buy TV advertising for consumers, it's because you want to sell soap. I'm not going to buy a jet. Why are they running these ads? I don't think it's propaganda. I think that they're running the ads so that as an excuse to give millions of dollars to the corporation that is
right.
producing the news, so that corporation will think twice before they run a negative news story or even a factual news story about the military-industrial complex. But that's just my paranoid theory, Mike. I may be wrong on that, and
probably not.
Yeah, I don't think I am, but you know, who knows? I'm willing to keep an open mind. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Tom in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, Tom.
Hey, Tom. Just wanted to talk quickly about the Meet the Press thing with Howard Dean, and I won't take up a lot of time. Two things. He fumbled the question on Dean supporting Sanders and, quotes, socialism. We Democrats have got to learn how to handle that stupid question in a soundbite. I cannot believe I keep hearing this. And it's all about defining the word democracy. You know this. You say this all the time. But how come the leader of the Democratic Party cannot answer that question? He fumbled it horribly, although he did a great interview throughout. That question came up, and he acted like it was the first time you heard that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, the part of the problem is that, and this is the backstory you don't know, is that back in Dean's early days when he was running for governor, when he was lieutenant governor and then he was running for governor of the state, he used to criticize Bernie Sanders for being a socialist.
Okay, but he answered like, well, it's all words, right?
Yeah,
and I wish like you, because you do this so nicely, and it's the focuses. They define democracy, supreme power residing with the common people. They look at that genuine dictionary definition as socialism.
Yeah,
that's how the cons look at it. They want democracy to be capitalism.
Yeah,
and why can't
and
we?
And capitalism
that?
Is not a political system; it's an economic system.
Why can't Dean answer like that?
I mean, well, you know, because he doesn't have you as a wise counselor, Tom. That's the bottom line.
Well, we would win. That
you know, I know that, and you know that, and that's why I did those NLP classes, and they're still sitting there online, and I keep hoping somebody from the Democratic Party will listen to them. But you know,
and here's another term. Why don't we say it's a court packing scheme that these guys are doing, just like FDR did in his second term?
Okay.
These guys are court packing.
Yeah, Yeah.
Can't we use that term? What is wrong with that?
You're absolutely right. That's brilliant, Tom.
And by the way, last thing. Did he correct his misspeaking about Osama not being linked to 9/11?
No, he didn't. And Tim Russert didn't correct him and should have. Tim Russert just sat there with a Cheshire Cat grin on his face thinking, I'm going to give this guy all the rope he needs. You know, it's funny. Tim Russert, when he's got John McCain on, they're laughing and slapping each other's backs and having a good old time. What I got out of that interview more than anything else is that Tim Russert doesn't like Howard Dean personally.
Right. But why are the cons exploiting it on the radio today?
I don't know. I haven't. I do 6 hours a day of talk radio. I can't listen to anybody else.
I would be shocked if Dean's assistants did not put out a press release to correct that.
Yeah, and it's funny. When Dean said that, I thought, oh my God, he's handing a soundbite to the Limbaughs and Hannitys of the world.
That's what I was
doing. And what we're talking about, what Tom and I are talking about, for those of you who didn't hear Meet the Press, Howard Dean said, Osama bin Laden didn't represent a threat to America. He was, not, you know, blah-de, blah-de, blah. And what he meant to say was Saddam Hussein.
Exactly.
And he repeated it two or three times, saying Osama bin Laden. And it's one of those soundbites that could come back to haunt him, and I'm sure will.
It won't if he sends out a press release.
Well, it may or may not. But here's the thing. Here's the reason why I don't think the cons are going to use this, Tom. And that is because if they use it, everybody listening is going to say, oh, he meant to say Saddam Hussein, then the meme of Saddam Hussein didn't represent a threat will get a little more propagation. So I think that they're just going to, it's radioactive, I think they're just going to avoid it.
Very good point, because then they'll remind people, Osama's the guy we haven't caught yet.
That's right, yeah. I just don't think that they're going to go near it, because they don't want, both those things. Number one, we haven't caught Osama, you know, that's one of the huge failures of the Bush administration. And number two, that Saddam Hussein didn't represent a threat to us, one of the lies of the Bush administration. I don't think they want to go near either one, so they're not going to make fun of Howard Dean for misspeaking, because it's going to remind people of the failure and the lie of the Bush administration. Tom, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number, and we'll be back with your calls after this break coming up. I got to tell you, this stem cell thing, there's a fascinating piece of stem cell legislation working its way through the House right now that is co-sponsored by Republicans. A Republican has co-sponsored this piece of legislation. And Diane DeJette, a fifth-term Democrat from Denver, along with Representative Mike Castle, Congressman Republican from Delaware, to use the 8,000 estimated surplus embryos from in vitro fertilization. More in a minute.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
There is no doubt we're running out of our petroleum. In 30 years it disappears, and that is worrisome. So we send the fleet, but drag our feet on renewable energy. Cause God forbid our friends in Texas lose their monopoly. Though solar power would not pollute our water, air, and soil. We'd rather send our troops to war than lose a single drop of oil. We got 4 more years. We just won a majority. 4 more years.
The official song of the oil industry. Welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. We'll be back with your phone calls in just a minute. First, however, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service is with us with our daily report from the belly of the beast.
Oh, I'm totally at the belly of the beast. I am in Charlie Palmer Steakhouse, which is the closest restaurant to Capitol Hill, and where we would love to invite you for June the 14th, by the way.
Well, thank
and
you.
It is the place to see and be seen, and this is where the movers and shakers come to try and discuss whatever it is they can possibly do to get out of the huge mess that they found themselves in.
That mess being the nuclear option?
That being the nuclear option, and at this point, it's kind of, okay, we'll just, you know, enjoy the steak and pretend you were talking about it, because there's nowhere to go but down.
Yeah, so what's going to happen? Tomorrow is the big day, isn't it?
Tomorrow is the big day. There will be a vote. I think it's scheduled for 10:30. I may have got my times wrong. And we'll see whether Senator Frist has 60 votes for Priscilla Owen. The debate on Priscilla Owen will go on. This is going to be one of those rare occasions when we see them actually earning their money by staying up all night and working and debating this on the floor. Then they'll vote, and the chances are that he won't have 60. And it's at that point that he'll move to do all the complicated maneuvering that, that we've come to know as the nuclear option, where they will try to get rid of the filibuster.
Yeah, yeah, interesting.
And we just don't know. We don't know who has the votes. We don't know. We do know that the 12 who are trying to broker some kind of peace deal are finding it difficult to work out the language and to get sufficient support.
Okay, so we don't know, you don't know, but do they know? Does Frist, do Frist
yeah.
And what's his name know?
Reed.
Reed,
this is,
yeah.
This is the big question in Washington today. Do they know? And I have to be honest with you and say, I don't know. I can't tell whether they really know. The conventional wisdom at this point is that Frist is so canny that he wouldn't be doing this unless he was sure of the results. But then there's another conventional wisdom that says he doesn't care because he feels that he's going to win either way with his constituency,
yeah.
And that Reed doesn't care because he thinks that he'll win. So I wish I could tell you, Tom, but if I did, I could be earning 9 cents a minute on my 900 number.
You're probably more like a dollar a minute, Victoria. Yeah, good one. Good one. Okay, so, and I, by the way, I agree with that analysis that both Frist and Reed, if they simply stand firm, ultimately, at the end of the day, no matter how this shakes out, will have won with their base.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
And although I suspect that that middle America is about over it and is starting to view Bill Frist as one very toxic guy, I have a feeling he's going to get as radioactive as Newt Gingrich did.
Well, I think that's a possibility. It's interesting, as you know, I have my father staying with me, and he's been watching this, he's taken a vehement dislike to Frist. I don't know why, but he didn't even know who he was, and he said, I can't stand that man with the hair. And I said, well, you know, they've all got Senate hair, which one is it? And he pointed him out and said, oh, yeah, Senate Majority Leader.
Yes.
Good instinct.
Yes, yes. So what else is happening in Washington today?
Well, Hamid Karzai, president of Afghanistan.
Yeah, the mayor of Kabul.
He's met with President Bush. He will be meeting with Defense Secretary Rumsfeld at the Pentagon. Basically, everybody, they'll be having private talks. We don't know what's being said. But they've also had their people saying the things that they need to say for their constituencies, you know, i.e., we're saying they need to clean up the opium, and they're saying that they need to get control of Afghan prisoners, and both things we know are not going to happen.
Right, and they're saying that they need more money, and we're saying we don't have any.
Right, yeah, of course, yeah, right.
Things to that effect, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Victoria Jones of the Talk Radio News Service. Thanks so much, Victoria.
Thank you.
And we will see you soon. Talk to you tomorrow. Whoops, wrong button. Turned on Victoria, not the music. Anyhow, it's 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. The place where smart people get their news.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You might like to dance.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. That, of course, Bob Dylan. Stem cell hope. I just want to just pop this out, just let you know about this. Every year in the United States, as a result of in vitro fertilization, they give women drugs so that they produce extra eggs. And those eggs are harvested, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, whatever it may be. The extra eggs are harvested. They put them in a petri dish. They mix them with the sperm of the husband, and they fertilize them. And then they take, you know, whatever looks like the most viable one out of the bunch, and they implant it into the uterus, into the womb of the woman. All this is done, you know, mechanically, because there's some problem that the woman has that doesn't allow this to happen naturally, usually the result of a fallopian tube infection earlier in life from things like, you know, chlamydia or from IUDs or whatever. But in any case, or sometimes it's just hereditary. And so in any case, there's these leftover eggs that are fertilized. They're not, you know, I suppose theologically, the Catholic Church argues that they're human beings. But we're not talking about fetuses. We're not talking about, you know, we're talking about blast cell, what are called blast cells here. We're talking about you know, something that is so small that you cannot see it without a microscope. And, you know, just a dozen, two dozen, 100 cells at the most of it's really started dividing a whole bunch. It still just looks like a little circle of cells. This little circle of cells. And thousands of these are thrown away every year by in vitro fertilization clinics. Now, this is why, by the way, the Catholic Church opposed test tube babies back, 27 years ago when it first started, in vitro fertilization, was because these fertilized eggs would get thrown away. So now they're opposing using those fertilized eggs to develop lines of stem cells. Again, they're not going to grow them into human beings. What you have to do is you have to take the DNA from the person who's going to be the patient that it's going to be given to and inject it into them. That's a process called cloning. It doesn't produce a person. This isn't Dolly the sheep cloning. It's just technically cloning basically is moving the DNA from one cell to another. It's done, by the way, in creating genetically modified foods that we eat, although you won't hear Bush talking about that. But in any case, there is a piece of legislation going through the House right now that will probably be voted on Thursday or Friday, maybe even as early as Wednesday, that Nancy Reagan is supporting, that Democrats and Republicans in the House of Representatives are supporting, that says, okay, these leftover embryos, these leftover fertilized eggs from these in vitro fertilization clinics, let's use them for stem cell research. We're not going to grow them into people. It's never going to get larger than the head of a pin. We're not talking about a baby here. We're talking about a clump of cells that are so small that if you put them on your fingertip, you couldn't see them without a magnifying glass. Let's use that to cure diabetes, to cure Parkinson's, to cure spinal cord injuries. Let's use these stem cells to cure these things. And the doctrinaire extremists within the Catholic Church and some within the Protestant denominations are saying, no, no, that's a fertilized ovum, that's a human being, you can't use that for research. So therefore, what do you do with it? Well, you throw it down, you throw it away, you flush it down the sink. That's what they're doing with them right now. Well, and truth be told, the Catholics don't like that either. The super doctrinaire, the fringe, the ideologues. And Bush says he's going to veto this bill if it reaches his desk, because it looks like it's going to pass Congress, because it makes sense. Bush is going to veto it. And now the Republicans are really upset in the House of Representatives, because they've taken this stand of, we're not going to go along. And Bill Frist, by the way, and Tom DeLay are opposed to this bill. They're right there with George W. Bush. No, ain't going to allow it. But now the House, members of the House are a little upset, and the Republicans are a little upset to discover that a few weeks ago the Republican Party did some polling and discovered that in Republican strongholds, in red states, 70 to 80% of people support this kind of legislation. So you may see some minds change. You may see some things turn around. Yeah, time will tell. Eric in Cincinnati, Ohio, on the line. Hey, Eric, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I really love your show.
Thank you.
I was calling today to pass on a story. My daughter and son-in-law are leaving this morning for Europe on their honeymoon, actually. And when they get to Europe, they're going to be walking through Europe, and they'll pass themselves off as Canadians.
Yeah, a lot of Americans are doing that now. You can buy Canadian flag stickers in all of the airports now in Europe when you first arrive. They're hot items.
Is that crazy? Is this what we're paying taxes for?
It's tragic. It's tragic. It is a sad commentary on the state of affairs in the world that we have a president who has made so many horrific mistakes that have led to the death of so many people and who has had such an absolutely incompetent foreign policy that Americans are at greater risk, both at home and abroad, than they were before George Bush Jr. came into office. And that Americans feel to protect themselves from that risk, from those dangers, that they have to try and pass themselves off as Canadians. It's tragic. The last time I remember that happening was the height of the Vietnam War, in the 71, 72. Yeah. Same thing was going on.
Well, thanks. I've contacted my congressman and one of my senators. I'm trying to get through to the other one. I'm just passing on that story to them.
Yeah. Well, the way, Eric, thanks for the call and good point. The main way to deal with this, Eric, is get politically active. you know, join the Democratic Party, join the Republican Party, join the Greens, join the Progressives, show up at the Democracy for America meetups, get politically active. That's how we have to deal with this. Armin in Florida on the line. Hey, Armin, how's Sarasota?
90 degrees.
Oh, not bad. Okay. What's up?
I'd like to comment first on the stem cell thing, if I may.
Sure.
Is this the way it is, Tom? In God's eyes, it's okay for people to create people, but it's not okay for people to use not yet people yet to create a solution to preserving people that are already people and preserve their health.
Well, here's where it gets really bizarre. When George Bush speaks of stem cell research, he says, and I quote, I'm quoting George Bush here, he says, I've made it very clear to the Congress that the use of federal money, taxpayers' money, to promote science which destroys life in order to save life, I'm against that, and therefore if the bill does that, I will veto it, end of quote. So, you know, he's arguing that a fertilized egg is life, and he's opposed to using it in any way to save life. On the other hand, when he speaks about the death penalty, he says, and I quote, quoting George W. Bush, I have been supportive of the death penalty both as governor and as president. I happen to believe that the death penalty, when properly applied, saves lives. So he's in favor of taking lives to save lives when we're talking about fully grown adult human beings who may or may not be guilty. You'll recall in the state of Illinois, the Republican governor there stopped the death penalty executions because when the DNA evidence started coming out, they discovered that as many as 10% of the people that they've been executing over the last 15 years were totally innocent people. Okay, so George W. Bush is totally in favor of executing fully grown human adults in order to save lives, but he's opposed to using a little, a pinhead-sized piece of tissue to save lives of people because that's taking life. Now, if you can explain the logic to me, Armin, you're a better man than I am.
Give me a break. Who can explain his logic?
Yeah, well, there you go.
And anyway, I want to ask you something else. And this goes to the people out there that claim to be Christians and right to lifers. I ask you this, Tom, since this illegal Iraq invasion, how many right to lifers have you seen protesting publicly the innocent slaughter of those people over there?
Yeah, none at all. And Armin, you raise a huge point, and this is the exact same point. George Bush is all about a culture of life when it comes to protecting a mass of cells. But and he's using the phrase culture of life. He stole that from Pope John Paul II, who begged him not to execute Carla Faye Tucker. Who George Bush not only executed but then made jokes about. John Paul II begged George Bush not to execute retarded children. Bush executed them. Pope John Paul II, who literally begged George Bush not to invade Iraq, and Bush did it anyway because it would lead to the death, the slaughter of innocents. At least the Pope was consistent. He was in favor of what he perceived to be life at all stages and all ages. George W. Bush, Jr., he's in favor of preserving life when it's invisible, but when it's visible, if it's a human being, drop a bomb. Jared in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Hey, Jared, what's up?
Hey, Tom. To answer Herman, I think it's because all he has to do is say I'm against same-sex marriage, and he prays, and most Christians just move on to a different topic.
Well, I don't think that's true of most Christians. I think that's true of a vocal minority. I'm a Christian, and it's certainly not true for me. I think Howard Dean came out this weekend on Meet the Press and made the point. He said, you know, that he doesn't go to church very often, but that doesn't mean he's not a Christian. I remember, you know, years ago when I was really into Christianity and into going to church, and I was raised a Methodist. And I got into the Coptic Church, and then I got into Assemblies of God, the Church of God, rather. And there was this thing about, you know, you're not really a Christian unless you're born again, and blah, blah, blah. And I went through that whole thing. You know, I mean, I was really into it. And looking back on it now, I get it that it's not about, you know, hey, here's my badge, here's the one I joined, here's the one I'm a member of. It's about, are you doing the things, I mean, that Jesus said? I mean, it's Matthew 25. It's right there. It's undisputable. And, you know, are you feeding the poor? Are you caring for the homeless? Are you giving water to the thirsty? Are you visiting those in prison? Are you protecting the weakest among us? You know,
right.
That's Christianity in its essence. And I think that most Christians, whether they go to church or not, I think that, and Dean, I thought it was just very eloquent the way he said that, you know, that he's a Christian and he's proud of it, and he doesn't have to go to church to prove it. You know, Reagan didn't go to church. Reagan never went to church. And yet he's the icon for these guys. So, you know, it's, you know, whether you go to church or not, you know, however you define it, whatever it is, still I think that there's, well, you know, you got me off on a rant here. Jared, let's go back to your original point.
Yeah, that's kind of funny you just said about Howard Dean. I heard a right-wing talk show host today speak of that. I didn't myself get to see the interview, but a guy that you met with a while back, Glenn Beck. Now, how much I take his politics serious is, you know, here nor there. But what he had labeled Dean as today was, because of the Christianity talk, number one, was that he's a hypocrite. He said he's a hypocrite for many different reasons. There was no real substance to what he was saying, but the one thing that really caught me was I didn't hear the interview, but somewhere Dean talked about the Terri Schiavo case.
Right.
And I thought it was very interesting what Glenn said was that, you know, how that maybe Howard Dean said that he thought some of the people used the Terri Schiavo case to better themselves politically, when didn't we see Tom DeLay do that?
Oh, yeah, and raised millions of dollars, by the way. Terri Schiavo raised millions of dollars for the right wing.
And even himself, Glenn Beck, was a huge advocate for her, just to hear him speak.
Well, he was an advocate for keeping her alive. I would not say that was an advocate for her if that's not what she wanted.
Right.
I would say he was a huge advocate against her, but in any case.
I've noticed listening to him lately, the way he's been speaking, maybe some of the other right-wing talk shows, I think they're starting to speak a little scared.
Yeah, no doubt about
they
it.
Are.
They get it that the wind is blowing a different way. Jared, thanks for the call and for raising these issues. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Alan in Trumansburg, New York on the line. Hey, Alan.
Hi, Tom. How are you today?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up?
After November 2nd there, I and a lot of liberals were kind of irritated how quickly Kerry backed off and just sort of disappeared, right?
Yeah. Irritated is a gentle word for what I was feeling.
Right. Well, I was just starting to wonder if I'm wondering how close we were at that point to revolution, violence, and if maybe that is why he backed away.
I don't think that we were close to violent revolution, but I think that Kerry could have won if he had simply pressed the matter. The fact of the matter is, over the weekend, I read John Conyers' report from Ohio. It's now out as a paperback. It's called What Went Wrong in Ohio, and it's the report of the Conyers Commission. John Conyers and 11 members of the House Judiciary Committee went to Ohio and held hearings for a couple of weeks and took testimony, and they concluded that basically, I mean, this is my words, not theirs, but you read this, and it is impossible not to conclude that the election was stolen, that John Kerry actually won in Ohio, and that Ken Blackwell should be behind bars. I mean, and Conyers comes right out and says Ken Blackwell committed crimes, and he uses the word crimes, and talks about criminal behavior. And nobody is holding these folks to account. And if John Kerry had pushed the issue and had supported Michael Bednarik and David Cobb of the Green Party, you know, I think it's possible that he could be president right now. Look at in Washington State. You know, I'm broadcasting now from Portland, Oregon, and the next state up in Washington State, Dino Rossi, the losing Republican, he lost by 126 votes or something like that. He is, today or tomorrow, the trial starts to find, you know, and a judge is going to decide whether there should be another election because the vote was so close. And this is, I mean, this could have been the national story, but Kerry rolled over, and I have a feeling that there are a lot of Democrats who will never forgive him for that.
Well, you really think that the Republicans would just sort of go quietly into the night?
No, I think it would be a big battle, and it may end up in the Supreme Court again. But I think that if John Kerry had been willing to speak the truth, and if hearings had been held, and if he had done what Conyers did, I think that they could have revealed that there was vote fraud in Ohio, that there were crimes committed. I mean, here in the state of Washington, you got Dino Rossi yesterday on TV. It's now the end of May. Yesterday on TV saying, we have evidence of vote fraud in Washington State. And, you know, the Republicans are beating this thing to death. The Democrats, they wouldn't go near it. 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Now you can say that I've grown bitter, but of this you may be sure. The rich have got their channels in the bedrooms of the poor, and there's a mighty judgment coming, but I may be wrong.
No, I don't think so. I really don't think so. Right there in the Tower of Song, good old Leonard Cohen. Welcome back. 4.5 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Frank in Phoenix on the line. Hey, Frank, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom, how's it going? I wonder how many of those conservatives believe in the Beatitudes. I wonder if they follow that. Guess not. Anyway, what I really called about was how bad these conservatives are. In Arizona, they're trying to get Napolitano. She has a 70% approval rating, give or take a bit. And in 2006, on the ballot, they're trying to do that state constitutional ban of gay marriage and all.
Mm-hmm.
They would rather vote. The three previous governors that we've had were Republican. The first one was a racist. The second one was a thief. They had to be let off by Clinton. The third one was a teacher that couldn't count that tried to bankrupt Arizona. But these darn conservatives, how come they protest gay marriage and not this Mary Kay Letourneau marriage? Sounds to me like they endorse a child molester getting married to one of their victims.
Well, I'm not sure that they're endorsing that, but the reason why they're going after Frank the gay marriage is because it's a cheap shot. It's easy. It's like, you know, in the 50s, people are in the 30s, let's say, probably more apt because it's more nationwide. People going after, you know, the reefer madness, or the 20s, you know, going after pot and saying that it was those after smoking, and that was the you go back and watch Reefer Madness, you know, there's a heavy racism involved in the whole thing around pot criminalization. Peter in Tallahassee on the line. Hey, Peter.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
Love
and,
you.
And
love
by the way, let me just wrap up that point. And the homophobia is the modern day version of racism. So that's my point. Anyway, as you, Peter, your turn.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I have a question for you too about legal proceedings against the Bush administration. One is, if we are successful in 2006 to begin impeachment proceedings, does that mean that Dick Cheney takes over?
Yeah, and that's why you don't want to do impeachment. Instead, what we want to do is just reveal the crimes so that these guys, number one, will lose the House or the Senate, so then they can be prosecuted. That's the main thing, is if we can get them out of the House or Senate, then it's a Watergate scenario, and you've got real investigations going on, the real crimes get exposed, and you know, they will leave. Although, keep in mind, Nixon and Agnew were elected, and Jerry Ford ended up as president. So anything is possible. Tom Hartman here with you. Thanks for the call, bud.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast on radio stations from California to West Virginia, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system. Streaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, Live 365, Y365.com's American FM. And on cable TV systems in 29 states on CRN Digital. Welcome back to our program. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. If you want to drop into our live chat room, well occupied, interesting conversation going on in there right now. You can get there at TomHartman.com and just click live chat. It will drop you in. Let's see here. This weekend, by the way, I was at a Democracy for Oregon meeting. Which is fascinating. Democracy for Oregon is a spinoff of Democracy for America. And this was the local hoop-de-doop here in Portland, Oregon. And Jim Dean came and spoke, and Congressman Earl Blumenauer spoke, and State Representative Peter Buckley and Jefferson Smith, who runs the bus project here. Some great folks and a lot of fun. I was one of the keynote speakers, and I had a good time. I am just so impressed. Jim Dean, meeting Jim Dean was great. Howard Dean's brother. I am so impressed with Democracy for America, DFA, democracyforamerica.org, and the work that they're doing. And this thing that Howard Dean birthed, I mean, this guy has just done an amazing thing, just done an absolutely amazing thing. I mentioned in the last hour, and in just a second we'll get to your phone calls, I mentioned in the last hour the Conyers report. John Conyers went down to Ohio and said, okay, let's find out what's going on here. And the irony of this, of course, is that starting today, tomorrow, either today or tomorrow, I mean, we're waiting to find out, but probably tomorrow, but either today or tomorrow, starting in the state of Washington, there will be a trial. And the outcome of that trial will determine whether there will be a new election for governor in the state of Washington, because Christine Gregoire, the woman who won the election, according to the recount, by roughly 126 votes, is being challenged by Dino Rossi, the Republican, who is saying that, there was vote fraud. There were dead people who voted. There were people who were felons who voted. There were votes that didn't get, he says, there was vote fraud. There were dead people who voted. There were people who were felons who voted. There were votes that didn't get counted. And most of this was in King County, Washington, he's claiming. And King County folks are saying, hey, sometimes mistakes happen. You know, welcome to the wonderful world of human nature. But that's not good enough for the Republicans. The Republicans are saying, no, we want to do it all over again. Now, why didn't, John Kerry do that in Ohio? Let me just share with you a few sentences from the official findings of the House, United States House of Representatives Committee on the Judiciary, where John Conyers and 11 other members of the United States House of Representatives went to Ohio and convened a hearing and took testimony under oath and drew some very specific conclusions. I just want to share a few sentences with you. Report. It's in votes. Now, keep in mind, if 70,000 people had voted for Kerry instead of Bush in Ohio, by the official tally, John Kerry would be president of the United States right now. Cumulatively, back to the report, cumulatively, these irregularities, which affected hundreds of thousands of voters and votes in Ohio, raise grave doubts about whether it can be said that the Ohio electors, that's the Republicans, selected on October 13, 2004, were chosen in a manner conforming to Ohio law, let alone Federal Election Commission and constitutional standards. A few other quotes from the commission findings. Again, keep in mind, 70,000 votes gone the other way, John Kerry's president right now. Quote, there were 93,000 spoiled ballots where no vote was cast for president, the majority of which have yet to be inspected. These are ballots from people who stood in line sometimes as much as 6 to 10 hours to vote, and then decided inexplicably at the last minute not to vote for president. Or maybe they did, but the chat is hanging. The 93,000 spoiled ballots where no vote was cast for president, the majority of which have yet to be inspected. Quote, we learned of improper purging. This is what Kathleen Harris did in Florida, by the way. This is how Jeb Bush and Kathleen Harris stole the 2000 election for George W. Bush Jr. Anyhow, back to the quote. Quote, we learned of improper purging and other registration errors by election officials that probably disenfranchised tens of thousands of voters statewide. Quote, in Miami County, Ohio, voter turnout was an improbable and highly suspect 98.55%, and after 100% of the precincts were reported, an additional 19,000 extra votes were recorded for President Bush. After all of the votes were in, they just threw in another 19,000 just for good measure. Nice round number. Quoting from the report, in the run-up to Election Day, the following actions by Mr. Blackwell, the Republican Party, and election officials disenfranchised hundreds of thousands of Ohio citizens, predominantly minority and Democratic voters. In many cases, these irregularities were caused by intentional misconduct and illegal behavior, much of it involving Secretary of State J. Kenneth Blackwell, the co-chair of the Bush-Cheney campaign in Ohio. This is now in print as a paperback. It's called What Went Wrong in Ohio. You can find it in bookstores near you or online. Published by Chicago Academy Press. And it's pretty unambiguous. It's right there. Straight up. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number if you'd like to call in. TomHartmann.com, of course, if you click on live chat, if you want to drop into the chat room or a message board and blog if you want to participate in the more lengthy, some 50,000 discussions going on there. Ed in San Juan Capistrano on the line. Hey, Ed.
Hey, Tom. Good morning. I kind of wanted to talk about the Patriot Act, but in the new upcoming, even better Patriot Act.
The new and improved Patriot Act, coming soon to a police station near you.
And if I say the name Michael Moore, what comes into your mind?
You know, a fat guy who makes good movies.
Okay. Doesn't come into your mind as a skinny guy, short, clean-shaven. And yet this is what came into my son wanted to be laughed about a Friday night when he came home. Michael Moore came into his store and purchased a video. And he was saying, oh, boy, your name, hey, you know. And he says, don't worry. He says, every time I go to fly, and it just happened to him the other day, they pull him aside for 45 minutes to an hour, search his luggage and search everything, and won't let him pass until they realize that he's not the Michael Moore.
Really?
Really. Every time. And there was a line in the Hotel Rwanda that sends a chill up my spine that I really like. It was, watch your neighbors and report.
Yeah.
And it just seems that, you know, and this is the kind of thing that the Patriot Act addresses. And I think we got to get out in front of it and not say from a week in advance that, well, this is a bad thing.
Yeah, well,
we need to start kicking them.
Let me just address that for a minute, Ed. Ed, thanks for the call and for raising the issue and giving me a good stepping off point. I appreciate it. The Bush administration has proposed to grant the FBI broader authority to track the mail of you, I, or anybody else that they think might be involved in what they decide is terrorism. The Postal Service is pushing back, saying, wait a minute, we would like people to believe in the integrity of the mail. The Bush administration doesn't much care about that. They want to give sole authority to the FBI, not the postal inspector, to determine what mail should be inspected and what shouldn't. But it gets even weirder than that. This is an article that was published on Alternet last week by Bill Piper. It's titled Spy versus Spy. And in it, he lays out the provisions of House Resolution 1528. This is a bill before the United States House of Representatives introduced by James Sensenbrenner, Republican from Wisconsin. James Sensenbrenner, the Republican from Wisconsin, has proposed a piece of legislation which says that if you witness or learn about certain types of crimes, this has nothing to do with terrorism, by the way, if you witness or learn about certain types of crimes, that you may then have to spy on your family members and neighbors and even go undercover and wear a wire if needed. And if you fail to report to police within 24 hours one of these crimes, you yourself can go to jail for a minimum mandatory 2-year prison sentence, maximum of 10, but a minimum mandatory 2 years. Now, this is being promoted as anti-drug legislation. It's called the Safe Access to Drug Treatment and Child Protection Act. Doesn't that sound good? But basically what it says is that if you discover that your 13-year-old... It doesn't matter. If you discover your 30-year-old has come home smelling of pot, and thereby you infer that a crime has been committed, and you fail to call the police and notify them within 24 hours, and then if the police ask you to surreptitiously investigate the room of your child and wear a wire and interview your child and then give the recording to the police so they can prosecute your child, if you fail to do that, minimum mandatory 2 years in prison. If you sit down with your child and say, hey, you know, it looks like you have a drug problem, let's talk about going to a treatment facility, and you take that child to a drug treatment facility, a rehab center, instead of calling the police, you go to prison for 2 years. And it need not just be your child. It could be your best friend. It could be your parents. You know, what if you discover that your 70-year-old father with glaucoma has been smoking pot with his friends to keep his eyes from exploding? Because pot actually does help keep glaucoma in check. Well, you have 24 hours to notify the police. To do that, under James Sensenbrenner's new law, House Resolution 1528, you go to prison for 2 years. Is the police state here yet?
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Close your eyes, close the door. You don't have to worry anymore. I'll be your baby tonight.
And welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And if you would like to call in, our number 1-866-889-8894. And I extend that invitation not only to progressives and liberals and Democrats, but also to conservatives and Republicans and right-wingers. Chris in our chat room, for example. Chris, give me a call. Let's talk some of this stuff out. You think you've got it all figured out? Maybe you do. Maybe you can prove me wrong. It'd be great. And I don't play. People call up, I'll let them talk. So that can get a little tedious. Just doesn't make for good radio, frankly. 26 minutes past the hour. Do we really want to have laws on the books that say that if you don't become a spy for the government, then you can go to prison? I mean, what is up with James Sensenbrenner? Is Wisconsin, did they put something in the water there? I don't, or has he been in Washington, D.C. too long? Did they put something in the water there? I don't, or has he been in Washington, D.C. too long? Excuse me, it boggles my mind. It boggles my mind. These sentences would put nonviolent drug offenders behind bars for as long as rapists, and they include none of the drug treatment touted in the bill's name. Keep in mind this was called the Safe Access to Drug Treatment and Child Protection Act. But instead, it mandates 5 years in prison for anyone who passes a joint at a party to someone who at some point in his or her life has been in drug rehab. 10 years for mothers in jail, for mothers with substance abuse problems who commit certain drug offenses at home, even if their children are not at home at the time, even if their children are grown up and moved away. 5 years for any person with substance abuse problems who begs a friend in drug treatment to get them some drugs. This is, you know, this is coming out of the mentality that if you have a social program, and you have, if you have a social program acting out, and it really, in a very, obviously gay couple coming to the door of a church and the pastor saying, you're welcome here, and a multiracial couple coming to the church and, oh, you're welcome here. They wouldn't accept that ad. That was too controversial. But they did accept an ad from James Dobson for his parenting manual. And his parenting manual suggests that you must beat your children so hard, it may produce bruises, so hard that their will is broken and they learn to be in fear of authority, God, and government. And he comes right out and says that, so that they will fear government. This is I know it sounds hyperbolic, it sounds exaggerated, and I realize I say so at my risk, but, you know, I lived in Germany for a year, and I'll tell you, in the 30s, Hitler was publishing child care manuals that said the exact same thing. And I think an entire generation of Germans were wounded by that. And certainly how Hitler himself was raised. The conservative belief that you solve behavior problems by simply beating people is nonsense. You know, the extreme opposite, that you solve them by doing nothing, is also nonsense. But this is crazy. 29 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
You've got a headache. Now I've got some strange disease. Don't worry about it. This pill will set your mind at ease.
Uh-oh.
It's called Progenitorivox. It's made by Squab Merle Co. It's a life-enhancing miracle. But there are some things you should know.
Uh-oh.
It may cause agitation, palpitations, excessive salivation, constipation, male lactation, rust-colored urination, hallucinations, bad vibrations, mild electric shock sensations, but it's worth it for the drugs I need. My disease may not be fatal, but I can ease my fears by taking two $12 pills each day for 50 years. They've spent billions to convince me, so now I realize Progenitorivox beats diet and exercise. I've got insurance.
That's amazing. I got to get some of that Progenivorotox. Yes, indeed. Welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you 25 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. And Bernie in Bend, Oregon on the line. Hey, Bernie.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
I just called Mr. Sensenbrenner's office.
Oh, hey, good on you. What did they have to say?
Not much, just the usual boilerplate that you get from people like that. It's like getting a 1,000-yard stare. But I would suggest that people like him be contacted by as many people as possible.
Yeah. Well,
I have the number.
Well, here's the toll-free number. You dial 1-877-SOB-USOB and just ask for Congressman Sensenbrenner's office, and you'll get it. I'm serious. I'm not making this up. That's the actual. It's the old Senate Office Building phone number. That's where it originally came from, and they actually asked for that number. I mean, you know, probably a decade ago. But anyhow, it's 1-877-SOB, the letter U, SOB, and that gets you the switchboard at Capitol Hill, and then you just ask for James Sensenbrenner, and they will connect you.
Well, that's a good idea, but I do not understand the thrust of our senators and congressmen at this point in time, because this is free America.
Well, it was
evidently we're going to have to fight very hard, and it's very difficult because normally all the people with power have all the money. And how do you do that?
Well, you do that by being part of We the People. I mean, this is how we ended slavery. This is how we ended racism, or ended apartheid anyway in the United States. There's still racism out there. It's how we, you know, women got the vote. I mean, we have had so many really quite radical transformations in American society just in the last 200 years. And they're particularly radical when you look at them in this 6,000 or 7,000 year arc of history. I mean, literally for 7,000 years. People believed it was appropriate to have slaves. It said so in the Bible, in both the Old and New Testament. It was the part, it was in virtually all nations, all documents, have slaves. Men believed that women should be the property of men. And these two major toxic 7,000-year-old stories, we blew up in 150 years in the United States, which is an eye blink in the vast arc of history. And the way that we did it was by people getting active. And that's what we have to do. You don't have to become president of the United States. You just start participating. Start writing letters to the editor of the paper. Start calling into talk shows. Start talking to your friends. You know, go on the Internet, get information, print it out, pass it out to people, share it with people at work. Call Sensenbrenner's up, call your member of Congress, and then join your local political party. Join the Democratic Party, the Green Party, the Republican Party, whatever you're inclined to.
Totally depressed and in the depths of despair. I was in tears this morning. I mean, and I'm a 63-year-old man reading some of the things that people don't see, the madness, everything is wrong.
Well, those tears are not a good place to hang out. Take that same energy, because that emotional energy is powerful stuff, and convert it into action, and you will feel better, and you'll change our country.
Actually, I do. I believe that we have to, as human beings, that there is despair everywhere, but there is also beauty and awesome complexity of life. The most wonderful things in the world are still there.
Yeah.
Amidst all this horrible stuff.
Yeah. Well, I just have to say, and I've been there in despair, and I just have to say, despair is not an option. I have found it to be so unuseful. Because basically,
exactly.
at any given moment, you can either be moving away from pain or moving toward pleasure. And I would much rather be moving toward pleasure, moving toward what we want to build, rather than trying to run away from what we're afraid of. Let's confront what we're afraid of and push through it and create what we want to build. Bernie, you know, God bless you. Congratulations. I think that's great. You call Sensenbrenner's office. Keep up the good work and keep being an activist.
One thing that I might suggest people do that have access to it, listen to John Coltrane play Stardust.
Okay. Good suggestion. We all have our anchors, as they were, the things that light us up. And
is mine.
Yeah, great to hear that. John Coltrane is one of the great artists of all times. Thanks a lot, Bernie. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Steve in downtown Atlanta. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great, what's up?
I'm just a blue permanent ink stain here on a big red bandana down here in the South.
Well, you know, I'm not sure that Atlanta's all that red. You know, I'm still of the opinion that the 2002 elections were stolen in Georgia on the electronic voting machines. It's so clear to me when you look at the polls both before and after the elections that Max Cleland actually won, and that who was Sonny Perdue running against for governor?
Roy Barnes.
Yeah, and that Roy Barnes, he's the Democrat, right?
That's right.
Yeah, that Roy Barnes actually won. I think that vote was stolen in Georgia, and I'll just come right out and say it. It is just clear to me as the sun in the sky that the Georgia vote was rigged.
Yeah, you're not alone there. Getting back to that last caller.
And I lived in Georgia for more than a decade, so I'm not saying this out of, you know, ignorance of the situation. Pardon my interruption.
Well, you know, I mean, the ironic thing of it all is that it was a Democrat, Kathy Cox, Secretary of State, that really pushed these voting machines. And she is sticking by them hell or high water.
Well, that just proves that just because somebody's a Democrat doesn't mean that they're intelligent.
That's right. That's right. And it stinks. It just stinks. The last caller, you know, is talking about the fear thing. And case in point, you know, my wife and I have been, you know, typing up little flyers, distributing them out at the airport, you know, stuff like that. You know, all sorts of flyers.
Cool.
Basically saying, you know, hey, have you heard about the, Downing Street memo? You know, check out CNN.com, you know, things
right.
like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you start doing that, you know, you have this little sense of fear. Like, what if there's some sort of, you know, freak out there that, you know, doesn't like what I'm doing, is going to follow me home and, you know, take care. But then, you know, we stop ourselves. We're like, man, I'm not going to let fear stop me from doing this.
Yeah.
you know, I'm tired of living in fear. I mean, that's just...
This is what I went through, Steve, when I first started publishing books on this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, you know, and I would wake up in the middle of the night after I had submitted the books to the publisher. And then I, you know, if from whether it was books like Prophet's Way, which is about my, you know, personal spiritual stuff, or political books on equal protection, you know, about politics and we the people and what would Jefferson do and you know, stuff like that. And you know, you wake up in the middle of the night going, oh, my God, what happens if, right? And then I got it that, you know, basically fear is about hallucinating negative futures and not being here present. And you know, and shame and guilt, the black thick emotions, are about remembering past sins and not being here present. And if you bring yourself to this moment, every time you start feeling those emotions, just bring yourself to this moment, just say, I'm going to be right here right now.
Yeah.
It just goes away. It goes away. And so, you know, I published the books. I started the radio show. I wrote a piece 3 years ago for Common Dreams saying, hey, you know, there's a market for progressive talk radio. And everybody was like, yeah, you're nuts. And I said, I'll prove it. And I did it. And here we are. Here we've still been on the air for 2.5 years. And you know, we're picking up stations constantly. And it's real. And I've had, you know, somebody shoot out the windows in my car. There's a couple of bullet holes in the side of the car. I get death threats and email. And yet, you know, it's I can't let it stop me. I can't say, hey, I'm going to hang out in fear. I'm going to give into that stuff. I'm just, you know, I'm here. I'm here.
Well, you know, you start thinking about the reality of the situation that, you know, you're basically up against fanatics as well as a lot of money. And you start thinking about your kids and stuff like that. And, it's easy.
Yeah, I do. And I have kids and all that. And, you know, and they're with me. They're behind me on this. We just have to. These are the decisions. These are the kind of choices that the people who created this nation had to face.
That's right.
I mean, the day that those 56 people put their signatures on the Declaration of Independence, every single one of them became guilty of treason and you know, facing the death sentence. You know, they were all convicted of treason and sentenced to hang till they were dead. By simply putting their signature on the Declaration of Independence. When Ben Franklin said, you know, if we do not hang together, we shall certainly hang separately, he was not making a joke.
I mean, is there a good little compendium of stories about all those guys?
There is, actually. The book that I wrote, What Would Jefferson Do, has a couple of great chapters on early American history and how they got through that.
I'll do that. Two more things real quick, Tom.
Sure.
First of all, you need to put a link on your site that tells who those songs are that you play right before you come in, because that last one was great.
I know. You know, and the reality is I don't know who that was. Louise gets those things, puts them together, drops them into the automation equipment, and we're just...
Louise?
My wife, and who also produces this program, and we're just stretched really thin right now, and, you know, hopefully we'll have a staff person that can start doing that fairly soon. It's on the list.
And finally, I had to leave when you were talking about voting irregularities in Ohio and, you know, John Kerry being a wimp and all that. My question is, why hasn't the ACLU gotten into this?
Good question. I don't know.
I encourage all the callers out there to call your ACLU and ask them.
I would guess probably because the ACLU's thing is the First Amendment, and this has to do with voting rights.
That's the 14th Amendment, I guess.
Well, the 14th Amendment modified who could vote and determined, you know, part of the, I think the third or fourth clause of the 14th Amendment talks about how congressional districts are apportioned. But basically, you know, the voting is earlier on in the Constitution, you know, where it defines the Electoral College and all that kind of stuff. But the point is that, in terms of organizations, I would think that the League of Women Voters, for example, would be, you know, somebody who would be considered appropriate and nonpartisan, and you know, this would be their kind of thing rather than the ACLU. The ACLU, as I said, you know, pretty narrowly defines themselves to be about First Amendment rights.
So has the League of Women Voters gotten into this issue?
I don't think so. I don't think so. And it'd be interesting to give them a call and ask them. So
okay.
if any of our listeners do that, let us know what happens, and if you can think of any other organization that might be appropriate to participate in this. I mean, there's a bunch of organizations kind of ad hoc. Bev Harris with Black Box Voting, countvotes.us.
Oh, there's a ton of them.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of you know, Lynn Landis has a great organization.
Velvet Revolution.
Yeah, Velvet Revolution, isn't that .us also? I believe. I don't have the whole list of URLs right in front of me, but there's a bunch of folks who are working on these kinds of issues and, you know, good on them. I think, you know, here's, you know, I don't know why I didn't think of this earlier, Steve. Here's who really should be prosecuting this, who should be hysterical about this, who should be out pounding the, you know, the streets and running ads and everything. The Democratic Party.
That's right.
I mean, who has been harmed by this, right?
That's right.
The Democratic Party. And this is something that I've been saying for some time, I think MoveOn.org should take on. But
Yeah. Anyhow.
Steve, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
Take care, Tom.
Yep, you too. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Roy in Rio Rancho, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Roy.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to kind of put the word out again. Tomorrow there's a bunch of citizens' filibusters. We're doing ours in Albuquerque right in front of Senator Domenici's office building.
Oh, how cool.
And we're just, you know, we're going to talk and we're going to read speeches. And I have a couple of Tom Hartman articles off of Common Dreams that I'm going to read.
Oh,
we're
great.
Just going to run it. We're going to run it. But to go back to the fear thing, I've got to admit, as I was signing up with the, you know, now, if I had any doubt that my name isn't somewhere, I know it is now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just simply. And
well,
like,
you know, I got through that. Go ahead.
It's a little unnerving, and I've had to walk some people through the fear, and we've done some things, and I find myself every once in a while, am I playing Don Quixote? And then I said, no. And even if I am, I owe it to my grandson to do the best job that I can do.
Yeah.
This is his country. I just borrowed it from him.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Well said, Roy.
So anybody out there, get a hold of MoveOn, line it up, get your neighbors out there, call the local offices, get out and distribute handbills to flyer. I got a kick out of the fellow earlier, and that's a good idea. You know, have you heard about this? And because I've got some flyers that I just pass out here. If you got enough nerve, go here. Go up on these links. You know, I'm not going to try and convince you. Just go and listen.
Yeah.
Go
yeah.
look. Go listen. You know, I put your stream up. There's a whole bunch of things that I put up. But
speaking of listen and look,
people have to make up their own mind.
Yeah, speaking of listen and look, Roy, I don't know if I've mentioned it in the last hour or so of this program. I think I believe I mentioned it in the first hour, although it might be that I mentioned it in the morning show that I do on KPOJ. The Norm Coleman has purged from the congressional record.
I didn't see that.
The testimony of George Galloway. George, isn't that incredible?
I did not see that. I mean, I saw the link that said that he had done it, but I couldn't go find his
George Galloway's testimony is nowhere on the Senate website any longer. It's just gone. It never happened.
I mean, I read the transcript when it first happened. I heard some of the pieces of the audio, but it wasn't until I think it was yesterday morning or sometime Saturday I actually got to watch the video. And Galloway only took one sip of water after he'd done his whole opening testimony.
Oh, the guy's a brilliant orator.
He was so calm. He was wonderful.
Yeah.
So anyway, everybody get out. Let's do this citizens filibuster tomorrow. We've got the time. They're going to introduce it, but we still have 24 hours to change people's minds or at least put yourself on record and do it.
There you go. Well said,
Take
Roy.
Take care, Tom.
Thank you very much. Good to hear from you. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour, on the True People's Radio.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Magic carpet, right? Welcome. Sometimes the old DJ in me just is like, I want to get out here. Just got to play that music. Some music is just so classical. Let the sound take you away. Anyhow, welcome back, my friends. 4 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Recently discovered memo for an upcoming Social Security event in New York City shows, notes the Center for American Progress, just how far the White House will go to get the, quote, right mix, end quote, of people in the audience. This is incredible. Absolutely incredible. This is the Women Impacting Public Policy was a group that circulated this memo, but clearly it came from the White House. And what it said was, Bush was having one of his gigs, right? One of his events, one of his Social Security events. And what it said was that they were looking for, when I was soliciting several types of people who he, George Bush Jr., would like to visit with, including a young worker who knows that Social Security could run out before they retire, a young couple with children who like the idea of leaving something behind to the family, and a single parent who believes Bush's proposal for individual investment accounts would provide more retirement options and security than the present system. You get this? In fact, the memo says, essentially, everyone needs to be under the age of 29. It requests an immediate response because, quote, we will need to get the names to the White House, end quote. This is the sales pitch. And so then, you know, for example, in Wisconsin, Bush gets up in Wisconsin. He says to 22-year-old Concordia University senior Christy Pavola, got any thoughts on Social Security? She says, yes, I don't think it's going to be there when I retire. The participants in that day's event in Wisconsin appeared to mirror the criteria outlined in the memo to WHIP members. Besides Pavola, Bush was joined by a preschool teacher, a small business owner, and a dairy farmer and his wife who worked as a bookkeeper in a bank. None was over the age of 27. This is called demographic targeting. And your tax dollars and mine, our Social Security dollars, are being used to do it. Time to wake up. It's time to get active. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Thanks for being with us today, my friends. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.